centuries, perhaps even thousands of years. Why? We don't know. To do what? We don't know. And then, even more mysteriously, the archaeological record suggests that over a relatively short period of time, thousands of years ago at Göbekli Tepe, some unknown catastrophe struck. Not a natural one like an earthquake or a meteor strike or a flood. Instead, rather suddenly, the entire place was over, done, disused, backfilled in with earth and stone. If this was by intention or disaster, scientists have yet to discern. Excavations continue and the mystery remains. From that enigmatic moment forward, Göbekli Tepe became a buried time capsule. It lay hidden beneath the earth for thousands of years. What happened at Göbekli Tepe? What caused these humans to suddenly meet their end? Michael Morsch has no answer to this riddle. We can tell you what they ate, Morsch says, referring to modern man's astonishing ability to gather plant DNA from fireplaces and pits used 12,000 years ago. We can tell you what animals they hunted, but we can't tell you what they were thinking or what happened to them. For us, millennia after a full-scale nuclear exchange, it could be the same. Humans of the future could find remnants of our present-day civilization and wonder, how did it fall into disuse? What happened to them? In the dawn of the nuclear age, Albert Einstein was asked what he thought about nuclear war, to which he is said to have responded, "I know not with what weapons World War III will be fought, but World War IV will be fought with sticks and stones." Stones, attached to sticks or spears, are how Stone Age people fought wars. The Stone Age, that vast prehistoric period that lasted for several million years, during which humans used stones to make tools, ended some 12,000 years ago, right around the time that hunter-gatherers are understood to have built Göbekli Tepe. Albert Einstein feared nuclear weapons could and might put an end to the advanced civilization that mankind has spent the last 12,000 years creating. Einstein feared that humans could become hunter-gatherers again, all because of a terrible weapon civilized humans had created to use in wars against their fellow so-called civilized humans. The story you have just heard imagines exactly this. A story where 12,000 years of civilization in the making gets reduced to rubble in mere minutes and hours. This is the reality of nuclear war. For as long as nuclear war exists as a possibility, it threatens mankind with apocalypse. The survival of the human species hangs in the balance. In the aftermath of a full-scale nuclear exchange, survivors of nuclear war and nuclear winter would find themselves in a savage world entirely unrecognizable to anyone alive today, Carl Sagan forewarned. That, save a few tribes in the Amazon or military-trained preppers, almost no one living today has actual hunter-gatherer survival skills. That after a nuclear war, even the hardiest of survivors would have great difficulty navigating a world poisoned by radiation, malnourished and disease-ridden, while living mostly underground, riding out the cold and the dark. The population size of Homo sapiens conceivably could be reduced to prehistoric levels or below, Sagan wrote. Small groups of people would interbreed to survive, producing offspring genetically compromised, some blind. Everything collectively learned by all of us, and all that has been passed down to us by our ancestors, would become myth. With time, after a nuclear war, all present-day knowledge will be gone, including the knowledge that the enemy was not North Korea, Russia, America, China, Iran, or anyone else vilified as a nation or a group. It was the nuclear weapons that were the enemy of us all along. Acknowledgements. Nuclear war is insane. Every person I interviewed for this book knows this. Every person. The whole premise of using nuclear weapons is madness. It is irrational. And yet, here we are. Russian President Vladimir Putin recently said that he is not bluffing about the possibility of using weapons of mass destruction. North Korea recently accused the U.S. of having a sinister intention to provoke a nuclear war. We all sit on the razor's edge. What if deterrence fails? Humanity is just one misunderstanding, one miscalculation away from nuclear annihilation, United Nations Secretary General Antonio Guterres warned the world in the fall of 2022. This is madness, he says. We must reverse course. How true. The fundamental idea behind this book is to demonstrate in appalling detail just how horrifying nuclear war would be. Fittingly, I must first thank the dead. Alfred O'Donnell, born 1922, died 2015, taught me about nuclear bombs. In our interviews over 4.5 years, he shared with me information that was not only extraordinary, but unparalleled. As a member of EG&G's four-man arming party, responsible for final connection checks before all nuclear tests, O'Donnell wired, armed, and/or fired some 186 of America's atmospheric, underwater, and space-based nuclear weapons, including the ones at Operation Crossroads. Colleagues called O'Donnell the Trigger Man. Ralph Jim Friedman, born 1927, died 2018. Also with EG&G, photographed thousands of these nuclear bomb tests at the Nevada test site and in the Marshall Islands. I chronicle his eyewitness account of watching the 15-megaton Castle Bravo bomb detonate in the Pentagon's brain. Dr. Albert D. Bud Whelan, born 1929, died 2013, shared with me tales from his legendary career of firsts. He helped develop America's first intercontinental ballistic missile, the Atlas, America's first spy satellite, codenamed Corona, and he served as the CIA's first director of its Directorate of Science and Technology, DS&T. He was also the mayor of Area 51, his words. His life's work was dedicated to preventing World War III, Whelan told me. Colonel Hervey S. Stockman, born 1922, died 2011, lived an extraordinary life. He fought Nazis in World War II, flying 68 missions in a P-51 Mustang. He was the first man to fly over the Soviet Union in a U-2 spy plane. he flew radiation sampling runs through megaton-sized thermonuclear bomb clouds in the Marshall Islands. He flew missions in the Vietnam War until he was shot at, crashed, was captured, tortured, and made a prisoner of war for almost 6 years. After his March 1973 release, Hervey insisted on wearing his POW uniform to medal ceremonies, much to the Pentagon's chagrin. "The invitations stopped coming," he told me. "They wanted war heroes, not former prisoners." Charles H. Towns, born 1915, died 2015, who won the Nobel Prize in 1964, left a profound impact on my thinking, which I write about in Phenomena. The concept of dual-use technology, science that can be used to help or to harm, is a paradox. Townes's invention, the laser, has done so much to benefit mankind, from laser surgery to laser printers. But the Pentagon's classified laser weapons program is fostering a new kind of arms race. Dr. Walter Monk, born 1917, died 2019. A geophysicist and ocean scientist, worked on anti-submarine warfare and marine acoustics for the Navy. He generously shared with me stories of ocean science experiments he conducted during nuclear bomb tests in the Pacific. He advised presidents, held the title of Secretary of the Navy Research Chair in Oceanography, and revolutionized man's understanding of the sea. Colleagues called him the Einstein of the oceans. Edward Lovick Jr., born 1919, died 2017. The grandfather of stealth technology and longtime employee of Lockheed Skunk Works taught me many things over 10 years of interviews. His take on scientific revelation is priceless. Lovick unlocked the long-held quest for stealth technology serendipitously, he explained, while changing his child's diaper. His eureka moment came when he realized the secret to stealth was absorption. Paul S. Kozumchak, born 1948, died 2017. DARPA's longest-serving employee shared a shocking story with me in a 2014 interview that planted a seed for this book. Guess how many nuclear missiles were detonated during the Cuban Missile Crisis? He asked, then continued, "I can tell you that the answer is not none. The answer is several, as in four. Two by the U.S. on October 20th and October 26th, 1962, and two by the Soviet Union on October 22nd and October 28th, 1962, each of which was exploded in space. Firing off nuclear weapons tests in a DEFCON 2 environment was testing fate. Marvin L. Murph Goldberger, born 1922, died 2014, founder of the Jason Advisory Panel, designed many weapon systems for the Pentagon. He shared with me his vast knowledge about sensor technology and its role in command and control. He also shared a regret. Goldberger told me he wished he'd spent more time doing science for science's sake and not doing science for war. "At the end of your life, you think about these things," he said. Dr. J. W. Forrester, born 1918, died 2016. A pioneer in computer engineering and the father of system dynamics, schooled me on a fundamental concept underpinning nuclear command and control. It is a system of systems, a giant machine made of many moving parts. Knowing this, and knowing all machines eventually break, is a terrifying thought. Researching, reporting, writing, and publishing a book requires an enormous amount of help, of ingenuity and generosity from lots of people, and also good old-fashioned hard work. A few individuals I would like to thank here are John Parsley, Steve Younger, Sloan Harris, Matthew Snyder, Tiffany Ward, Alan Ratbort, Frank Morse, Jake Smith Bosanke, Sarah Thegby, Stephanie Cooper, Nicole Jarvis, Ella Kirky, and Jason Boer. Thank you, Claire Sullivan, production editor, and Rob Sternitsky, copy editor, for staying eagle-eyed all the way to the end. Many sources assisted me on background, or on deep background, as we say in the biz, some going back 10 and 12 years. I thank you. And a huge nod of gratitude for everyone bold and brave who went on the record and allowed me to quote them in this scenario. In particular, I'd like to thank Glenn McDuff and Ted Postal, who read early, messy drafts of the manuscript and pointed out where I needed to dig in and report certain things more deeply. Thank you, John Wolfsthal and Lieutenant General Charles Moore, retired, for reading closer to final page proofs with a rare precision that comes with having spent decades in the nation's service. Thank you, Hans Christensen, for reading and proofing nuclear warhead and weapon system numbers with an expertise and level of patience that seems unrivaled. Ben Kalin provided excellent fact-checking. Thanks to John Tyler Moore at the Los Alamos National Laboratory Archives, Max Howell, manuscript archivist at the Niels Bohr Library and Archives, and everyone at the National Archives and Records Administration over the years, but particularly Richard Puser, David Fort, and Tom Mills. Thank you to Cynthia Lazaroff for her insight on the subject of nuclear dangers, and to Paulina Sokolovsky, Julia Grinberg, and Nathan Sokolovsky for helping me with Russian translations. I want to thank Shane Salerno of the Story Factory for bringing me the idea for this book and for working with me on the manuscript. Thank you to archaeologist Dr. Oliver Dietrich and Dr. Jens Notroff, who have worked at Göbekli Tepe over the years and shared with me their insights about that remarkable and mysterious place. It takes a village to accomplish everything that is worthwhile. My village includes Tom Soininen, the person from whom I inherited the talking stick, Alice Soininen, Miss You Mom, Julie Soininen Elkins, John Soininen, Kathleen and Jeffrey Silver, Rio and Frank Morse, Kirsten Mann, Ellen Collett, Nancy Clare, Judith Edelman. And of course, nothing I do happens without the brilliance and the endlessly inspiring ideas I get from Kevin, Finley, and Jet. You guys are my best friends. This is Annie Jacobson. We hope you have enjoyed this unabridged production of Nuclear War, a Scenario. This program was directed by Dennis Kao, executive producer Sarah Jaffe. Edited by JSR Post, LLC. Text copyright 2024 by Anne M. Jacobson. Production copyright 2024, Penguin Random House, LLC. All rights reserved.